So this is the center update. It's an opportunity for me to talk about some of the things that happened behind the scenes. And the first thing I want to acknowledge, as you can see, our stage area is set up for our Billboard on Bernard show. How many of you have been to experience the show? Raise your hand. Isn't it awesome? And raise your hand if you're in the show in any kind of fashion, as a participant, as a helper. Awesome. Awesome. And you know, yesterday we had a crew of about 15 or 20 people working on the grounds, cleaning things up. There are pine needles everywhere, all over. So if you had a hand in helping our beautification process yesterday, raise your hands. We want to appreciate you as well. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. So also today I want to acknowledge that I have a membership certificate, Lee Lineweber. If you'd like to come forth, we would like to honor and bless you today with this certificate. Can I give you a hand up here? Just step up here so everybody can see you. So I understand that you are a former member of a more traditional church. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And was it like the Methodist Church?
Yep.
And before you became a member of our church, you investigated all of our, like, finances and how we run the organization. Is that correct? No, not really. Well, I know, but... So when we passed the test of someone coming from a Methodist church into our Unity family, we are honored, because that is a transition that is really remarkable, and especially with your interest in making sure that we're in integrity, we're very proud that we have passed that test. Thank you so much. And so we honor you today with this certificate.
Joined as a community member, and I love your smile. I always see his smile when I'm looking out in the group. So we want to bless you with our Unity blessing. So if you'll all join me in blessing Lee as we say, we love you, we bless you, we appreciate you, and we behold the spirit that you are. All right, together. Lee,
we love you, we bless you, we appreciate you, and we behold the spirit that you are.
Thank you so
much.
And
so it is.
All right. And so I want to mention also that on Wednesday, November 9th, we'll have a meeting of those who are interested in being on the Mind Movie production team. This is a team that we're creating to be able to have an opportunity for anybody who wants a mind movie to have someone be with you, to work with you, so you can have your own mind movie. For those of you who have been coming for a month or so, you've heard about the Mind Movie Project. So if you have skills, really good computer skills, and are willing to learn the system so that you can volunteer and help others who don't have those kinds of skills, get their own mind movie, then you're welcome to come. There's no commitment that's required, and just in coming to the event, you'll learn all about what you're going to be counted on and what you say yes to by coming to that meeting. And then finally, last but not least, we have David Lineweber to come and share our spiritual life hacks for today.
Yeah, Dave.
So for those of you that are unfamiliar with the concept of life hacks, let me just explain briefly that a hack was something that was a computer programmer's shortcut. So it was a way to do something easier. And so then the internet generation invented life hacks, which are ways to make your life easier, such as using that Post-it you're about to throw out to get the dust bunnies from in between the keys on your keyboard or something like that, okay? So Jane has introduced us to spiritual life hacks, which is some spiritual practice that makes your life easier. So I'm here to talk today about a spiritual life hack that I resorted to in my life out of desperation at one point. Let me set up the scenario for you. I was working for an agency that, there are nine of these agencies around the state. They are a school, we support schools. And it was my job to work with schools in a four-county area over on the other side of the state with technology, training their teachers, and working with their school boards, adopting policies, that kind of thing. And there was a employee of the agency that I worked for that was very, very good at his job. He did budgeting for school districts, but nobody could stand him. So they literally made an office for him in another town. Yeah. He was really good at his job, okay? But I had to teach classes in the building that he worked in. And everybody's like, oh, God, you know, he's warning me about this thing. And, you know, I'm like, I can get along with anybody, right? So, you know, I go up there, I teach a class, and then the next time I go up there, it wasn't that I didn't turn a coffee pot off or I didn't clean up the coffee station. I didn't unplug the coffee pot. Okay, I can deal with that. And, you know, the next time I'm up there, it wasn't that I didn't erase the whiteboard. I didn't erase it properly. There was still dust in the little tray at the bottom of the whiteboard, you know. And you starting to get the picture?
Yeah.
You know, anal retentive is a term that was invented to describe this guy. And so the next time I went up there, it was I had not left the three-way light switches in the proper position. And, yeah, I'm like, okay, I can't deal with this. And so I'd heard about this technique, and so what I do is, while I'm meditating, connect with my higher self and then ask my higher self to connect with their higher self. And the theory is that, you know, when their higher self is telling them something, it eventually trickles down and they get the message. And honestly, after that, he was easier to deal with, at least with me. And in fact, when I left the organization and took a different job, he complimented me on what a great employee I was, and I was the best tech director they'd ever had, and all of this stuff. So it does work. Try it. It works. So meditate, connect with your higher self, connect with your their higher self, and then work on working out whatever difficulty that you have between you. So try it. It works. You'll love it.
So this is our meditation time, and I invite you to begin, as is our custom, with establishing a rhythmic pattern of breathing. So breathing in and out for the same duration. And as we begin this process, you might visualize the breath as it enters into your heart space, right at the very center of your chest. And then when you release, just imagine pushing the air out of your solar plexus, which is just a few inches below your heart space. And as you settle in, with each breath, becoming more relaxed, bring into your awareness someone or something that you appreciate. It could be a family member, a friend, a life partner, a beloved pet, or even a fond memory. Just whatever carries with it the felt sense of appreciation. And allow yourself to feel that appreciation. As if every cell in your body is experiencing a deeper sense of peace and harmony because of that feeling. And then allow it to extend beyond your physical self, imagining that in this room, together, we're creating this field, this energetic field of heart-centered coherence. And it is this field that now supports us in entering into a deeper connection with that part of ourself, the truth of ourself, our own sense of more than enough. Our awareness that we're here to make a difference. Our understanding that our life is the invitation for us to express that which we are, to bring forth a greater good in our life that touches the world and blesses those that are part of our journey. And so we connect at depth with this wellspring of God life that is our more than enoughness, that is our truth. And so as we enter into an even deeper experience of our oneness with God, of our connection to each other, and that activity of spirit that is moving into an even greater expression of who and what we've come here to be, let us now draw closer to the depth of our being in the silence, beyond the words, beyond the thoughts, just in the stillness of this moment. And so breathe in and release. And as we begin to make our way back into the awareness of this place and this time, we carry with us that felt sense of our connection to the truth of who we are, that we're more than enough, that we're here to make a difference. That we are the one unto our life, that we are source. And so for the wonderful ways in which our life calls us to be the expression of this that is the truth of us, we give thanks. We give thanks as well for this feel, this loving presence that we have created together that nurtures us, that heals us, that prospers us, that inspires us, that transforms us. Thank you, Spirit. Thank you, God. And so it is. Amen.
Wow. Aren't they amazing? We are so blessed at this church, and I am so grateful to both of you and all the work you have done for Billboard on Bernard and continue to do. And let's give them another hand. And every single one of you that is in the show. Gary and I were here Friday night, and wasn't it great? Those of you who have seen it already, oh my God. Fabulous. Well, good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
My talk this morning is a third in a series based on the book, How Then Shall We Live? By Wayne Mueller. And each week we have looked at a different question, beginning with, who am I? Who am I? We examined the roles and the labels that we may have taken on that can be clouding the expression of our authentic self, our higher self. And David, if you ever come to me and say, my higher self had a conversation with yours yesterday, I'll know I did something. The second question was, what do you love? What do I love in my life? We explored the transformative power of discovering that, discovering what we love, and immersing ourselves in it. Immersing ourselves. Both of those questions seem pretty innocuous, you know, on the outside. But truly, they have the potential of unlocking a deeper dimension of living in our day-to-day life. And that comes from letting our heart lead, letting joy be our compass. I love that. Following Spirit's guidance, asking for that guidance, and then following it, letting wisdom and the deeper intelligence within us show us the way. And there's that unleashes something that enlivens us when we do that, when we follow what inspires us. So our question this week is not so benign as the other two appear to be. It's a much more provocative question, and it's this. How shall you live knowing you will die? All right, let's all take a breath. And I know it's Halloween next week, but that's not why we're asking the question now. That question can get our attention. Because so often, we ignore the fact that someday we will die, or that everybody dies. We kind of, you know, we just don't pay attention to that, right? And, you know, it could be today, or it could be 10 years from now, or it could be 50 years from now. We don't know. We don't know. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Hindu scriptures, the question is posed, of all the world's wonders, what is the greatest wonder of them all? And the answer is that no man, though he sees others dying all around him, believes that he himself will die. And we can include women in that statement, of course. And especially boomers. Okay, so those of us that are boomers, don't we think like we're going to live forever? Don't we think we're still 17? Yes. Unless something happens that shocks us into a place of mindfulness, like what happened when I turned 60 a couple years back. As I celebrated my 60th birthday, I had an awakening moment where I really felt my mortality. You know, I thought, you know, the time left that I have in my life is shrinking. Now, it could be 40 years, I don't know. It could be 20. When I thought back 20 years, I thought, that's not a lot of time. 20 years ago, it was almost 1997. That's not a lot of time, right? It's kind of depressing when you think of it. No. And I got that if I wanted to immerse myself in what I love, I'd better get going. It lit a fire under me. Write the book. Don't wait. What are you waiting for, you know? Because there are no promises. Now, this doesn't mean we live in morbid fear of when it's going to happen. But it does mean that we have an awareness that it is going to happen. And to start treating every moment as the sacred space that it is. God is with us every second, every hour, every moment of the day. My talk this morning is, now is the time. We've heard that it's my time, it's your time, now's the time. And the truth is that now is the only time we have to be who we've come here to be. We can't do it yesterday, can't do it tomorrow, only now, only now. So how shall we live knowing that we will die? Let me start with another question. What is the opposite of life? Death. Actually, death is the opposite of birth. There is no opposite of life. Sorry, it was a trick question. That's the good news. That's the good news, right? So while we want to be aware that our time on the physical plane is limited, the truth is we never die. We are unborn and eternal. And that's what I tell people now on my birthdays. How old are you, Jane? I'm unborn and eternal. Thank you. Try and put that many candles on the cake. And so life continues. Life is, maybe in a different form, but it's the form that we're in right now has a limited shelf life. And I've not found a date stamp anywhere that tells me exactly when that expires. So we can use death as a teacher, as a companion, not in the way that, like looking over your shoulder at the Grim Reaper as a type of companion, not that. Just letting it help us stay present, present to the now, and to not take 1 second of this for granted. You know, I remember very clearly the day when I finally realized consciously something I'd been hiding from for a while, and that was that my mother was going to die soon. She had been bravely fighting cancer for 4 years and was suffering deeply. And she finally gave up the fight. I saw that in her. And she began her decline. And I remember the day when I realized that she wasn't going to make it through the summer. And I deeply grieved, deeply. But with that level of clarity that I reached on that day, it touched me in a profoundly deep way. And I was able to accept what was happening and to use every moment to connect with her. I started to value every interaction we had, every phone call, every conversation, every moment that we had together. I became very present to that. And she shared with me that on the day of her diagnosis, she and my dad made a pact that they would laugh together every single day. And you know, they stayed with that pact. They didn't miss a day. It was a goal they had, and they made the best of all the remaining time they had together. And you know, I had that same moment of clarity when Gary was diagnosed with cancer. When he received that diagnosis, I realized how much I wanted to cherish every moment we had together. Never take it for granted. Not 1 second. And what a blessing you are in my life. All right, let's all take a breath. Tomorrow's my mother's birthday, so I'm really feeling the connection with her in a deep way today. So I didn't come here today to get us all depressed. But just to really realize, you know, Bronnie Ware is a hospice nurse. She found that people on their deathbed had 5 major regrets that they would share with her. And these are what they are. I wish I'd had the courage to live life true to myself, not that others expected me to. That's a big one. I wish I hadn't worked so hard. You know how they say when you look back in your life, you don't wish you'd been in the office more often? I wish I'd had the courage to express my feelings. I wish I'd stayed in touch with my friends. And this one, I wish I had let myself be happier. Let myself. So let me ask you, are you living a life true to yourself? Immersed in things that bring you joy? Expressing yourself authentically? Connected with those that you love? And are you letting yourself be happy? You know that saying by Hafiz, ever since happiness heard your name, it's been running through the streets trying to find you. Are you letting yourself be happy, or at the end of your life, are you going to have regrets? All the things that we find so irritating, you know what I'm talking about, or so important, if we had 1 week to live, would they have that same significance? You know, I will often ask myself, how much is this going to matter 10 years from now? Our trivial problems shrink when we awaken to the impermanence and the preciousness of human life. There's a Buddhist story that says, suppose the earth was totally covered with water, and bobbing on the top of the water was a round yoke, like a life preserver. And in the water was a blind sea turtle who would only come to the surface once every 100 years. Somebody thought this story up. What do you imagine, they ask, the chances would be that that blind turtle surfacing every 100 years would stick his neck through that ring? And the students hearing this said, very rare. Yes, just so is the Buddhist belief that it is equally rare that one attains the state of human life. Now, it's a very convoluted way of saying it's precious, that we're here for a reason, that we all are here to be who we've come here to be. Isn't that cool?
Yes.
Really? And we have to be aware of that. We have to hold on to that awareness. You know, I read the story of a young woman who worked for a major television network, and she designed ads. And she also designed ads for Vogue magazine and for George Lucas. She had a very lucrative career in advertising. And one day she was filming a Diet Cola commercial in Malibu. And she stopped as she realized that the industry that she was part of was using anorexic models to sell diet soft drinks to teenage girls. And she stopped, put everything down, and walked off the set and never came back. She abruptly changed course and left a 12-year successful career just like that. And that night she asked her heart, what can I do with my life? You know, with the gifts that I have, with the insecurities and the fears that swim around my psyche. What can I do with all of that in order to bless the world in some way? Well, she knew the film industry, the TV industry, the ad industries inside and out. And so she began to visit junior high schools and talk to the girls. And she would show them what supermodels look like at 5 a.m. and what they look like at 3 hours later with makeup and hair and photography and lighting and all the rest of it to make them beautiful. And then she showed them pictures of before and after airbrushing with all the flaws removed, colors changed in their faces, even body shape changed where they would be taller and thinner. And she told the girls that this was a billion-dollar, multi-billion-dollar industry that spent millions every year just to tell you that there's something wrong with you and that they can fix it. And her biggest message to these young girls was this: you are enough, just as you are. Nobody has to fix you. And she ended by saying to these bright young women, we can no longer afford for the best and brightest among us to live in a state of constant insecurity. Wow. Now, the female teachers were hearing her, and they started asking her to come and speak to their groups. And so she found herself in the afternoons talking to adolescent girls, in the evening talking to women. And then she went even earlier and earlier, younger and younger girls, because she realized this message was being marketed at an even younger age. And guys, I know you get that same message. You know, this story just happens to be about a woman with girls. But the point was that she was struck by the need to spend her life doing something that helped people awaken to their true value rather than selling them a bill of goods that they had to look outside of themselves to be fixed. Do you see that? And that's the kind of urgency and sense of purpose that comes forth when we live our lives knowing we shall die. Acceptance of impermanence can set us free, can help us to live without attachment. And that's not to say that we don't have loving connections with people. Of course we do in our relationships. Do you see, though, that we can have a much deeper appreciation and connection with others when we value our time together, knowing that it won't last? Do you see that? And a curious thing happens when we accept the impermanence of life. Instead of having a fatalistic fear of dying, we find peace. And our energy goes into truly loving, truly living right now. I love this stuff. Really. I remember the day before I was ordained a Unity minister. My class, there were 36 of us, and we had gone through 2 years of major transformation, inside and out. I'm sure our Unity ministers know what I'm talking about over there. All of us. And you've probably been through those kind of experiences. We've been through so much together. You know, the ups and downs of each other's lives, sharing our joys, sharing our tragedies, praying with each other, and changing on the inside, changing on the outside. It was a huge, powerful experience. But we knew that on that day, that was it. That the next day, we were all getting ordained and then scattering in all different directions. Right? And one of our classmates stood up and she said, "We will never again be together like this. Never. Some of us will come back for conventions. Some of us will come to winter meetings. Some might have ministries in the same regions. But never again will the 36 of us be here together like we are now." And she was right. It was such a poignant moment. I mean, 10 of those 36 people have passed away. And, you know, we see a handful of our classmates at conventions. We see them at meetings. Reverend Deidre and I, we were classmates, and we see each other now and again. She was here Friday night for Billboard on Bernard and loved it, loved it, loved it. And Andrew was with her. And Andrew leaned over and he said, "I can't believe I still know so many people in the choir." Now that tells you something about the commitment here, doesn't it? I see some of my classmates on Facebook, but that experience will never be repeated. And I remember sinking into the moment and really experiencing the last day together in a way that I had never done. So, you know, we're not ever going to be together like this again. Sink into the moment. Really experience it for what it is. God comes disguised as your life. This is the writer Paula Darcy says this. But we don't want to be so wrapped up in distractions or stressed out or immersed in our internal pain that we miss it. A Course in Miracles tells us that the gifts of the Spirit are, get ready for this, sure, eternal, changeless, limitless, forever giving out, extending love, and adding to your never-ending joy. That's what true living is. But we'll never unearth all that joy if we are not present. You know when they have a raffle and they say you have to be present to win it? Our life is not a problem to be solved. It's a gift to be gratefully opened and joyfully experienced moment by moment with deep gratitude. Because when we live our life present, saturated with gratitude, we can now use whatever is showing up in our world to grow into who we really are. Isn't that cool? Really? That's what it's about. So life is creating and sustaining a unique variation of itself as you. right now. Do you know that about yourself?
Yes.
Say it like you mean it. You are localized source in expression. So immerse yourself in that greater realization of who you are. Give the world the gift that you bring. Give the world the gift of your uniqueness. Stand in partnership with the divine and give joyful expression to the fullness that you are. Don't be afraid to live. So here are some questions to think about this week for those who are doing spirit groups and whoever else would like to do them. If you had 1 week to live, how would you spend it? Who would you call? Who would you be with? What would you be doing? And why aren't you doing it? What are you grateful for right now? Just check in with your own heart. What are you grateful for right now? And then the third one is a practice. As you go through this week, when you go through the day, stop yourself and ask, if this was the last time you were going to experience this, how present would you be right now? And Gary doesn't know this, but when I was writing this, I noticed that he was standing at the stove and he was doing some cooking. And I stopped and I immersed myself in that moment. If that was the last time I was going to experience this, how would it be? And I was filled with gratitude, filled with joy. So take the time to do that. Really taste your week and see. We're all here to be the ones to make the difference. We know that, right?
Yes.
Let's drink every drop. Are you ready?
Yes.
God bless.